I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, we've seen the viral videos of families being torn apart as they leave San Antonio's immigration court. ICE agents grabbing people who suddenly had their immigration cases dropped, and then they were snatched, detained, and later deported. What happened to those families? What happened to due process? How was this allowed? We're going to get some answers about the case of Carmen Herrera and her family and examine immigration mass deportation of the Trump administration, the strategic escalation of enforcement tactics, arrest quotas targeting people with no criminal history, despite the public statements of the administration. The story is told in a new documentary, Crackdown, Deported Under Trump on Al Jazeera. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Are you ready to amplify your impact through workplace giving? Many employers match donations, doubling or even tripling your support for TPR's local and global programming. Some employers even match gifts from retirees and spouses, so your contribution can go even further. Check if your company participates today by visiting tpr.org/workplacegiving.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Last May, Carmen Herrera went to San Antonio's immigration court. It should have been a routine update on her status as a Mexican national seeking residency in the United States. Instead, she was grabbed by ICE agents, shoved into the back of a van in front of her U.S. citizen husband, who had to watch helplessly. The scene went viral, and it's obvious why. The raw emotion, the brutality, the cruelty, the unfairness of it all on display. What happened to Carmen after that day and her family and so many others who have been detained and then deported by the Trump administration, most of them with no criminal history? A documentary tells that story, Crackdown, Deported Under Trump, Fault Lines documentary on Al Jazeera English. It's available to watch on YouTube. And we're joined by Natasha Del Toro, the investigative reporter for Fault Lines Al Jazeera English. Natasha, welcome to The Source.
Hi, Dave. Thank you so much for having us.
And Jeremy Young, a senior producer for Fault Lines Al Jazeera English. Jeremy, it's great to have you here.
Dave, great to be back.
Also with us, and we're excited to have Carmen Herrera's immigration attorney, Kate Lincoln Goldfish. And Kate, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So first off, I should say this. In the aftermath of the recent shooting at the ICE facility in Dallas, we should note, and I'd like to get your reaction to this, Natasha, that violence against ICE, and I don't know what happened at this shooting, it's still being investigated, but violence against ICE agents like that, that is not helpful, it is not a solution, and that is not what this is all about. Can you talk about that, Natasha?
Absolutely. I know that, I mean, Dave, there's still a lot that we don't know about the shooter or what his motives were, but we do know that he ended up shooting two detainees. We don't actually know if he was against the detainees or whether he was against the ICE agents. We're not sure who he was actually trying to target. There's some sort of preliminary information that came out that he may have actually, you know, there might have been some anti-ICE, something connected to anti-ICE in his background. But honestly, we just don't know. And it's always dangerous to, like, I know that some people on the right have been seizing on certain narratives about this. I think it's very dangerous before we have more information to start speculating on what happened. But we should always say that violence is never the answer in any of these cases.
Right. And Jeremy Young, people might think this is inflammatory and we're just adding to the situation. These are just the facts. We're reporting the facts right now.
Yeah, well, look, unfortunately, there's been a number of incidents of political violence that have gripped our country recently. I think, of course, nothing like that should happen. There is very interesting ICE resistance work, I would say, taking place in communities across the country where they're setting up systems to support their neighbors and also peaceful protests. Natasha was in Los Angeles when all of the action was going down there this summer. And we filmed for our story a lot of peaceful protests that were taking place at the same time.
All right, so let's get to our story about Carmen Herrera and others who have been detained and then deported by the Trump administration. Let's go to, Kate Lincoln Goldfitch, you are Carmen's attorney, immigration attorney. What happened that day? How did she end up being detained that day?
So this was at the end of May, and this was before the courthouse detentions had begun nationwide. And where now that we know immigrants who are in illegal status who go to court or go to an ICE check-in are at risk for being detained. But back in May, this was brand new. So on the morning of Carmen's hearing, we were scheduled with a judge who typically did remote hearings. Ever since COVID, we could just do WebEx to come into the hearing. And we had called the courthouse the day before to confirm that we could appear virtually. However, on the morning of the hearing, the judge ordered Carmen and our associate attorney to drive down to the courthouse, or she said she would order Carmen removed in absentia. So we thought it was odd, but they drove down to the courthouse. And when they got there, the ICE, which is the prosecuting attorney, moved to terminate the case, to Carmen's case. And over our objection, the judge terminated the case. And when we walked out, ICE was there waiting to detain Carmen, which, now we know this is happening in courthouses around the country. But at that time, on that day, it was something brand new and unexpected.
And so the judge seems to be part of the deal.
She agreed with ICE. She allowed them to terminate the case over our objections. And our argument was, we have had no time to prepare for this. We were not given any advance notice. She's pursuing legal status. She's married to a U.S. citizen. She has 6 U.S. citizen children. We want the case to remain under the jurisdiction of the judge. And despite all of those objections, the judge dismissed her case, which essentially releases any jurisdiction or power that the judge has over Carmen's case. And on the outside, she was detained, and they applied something called expedited removal to her, which is a fast track, no due process type of deportation that historically has only been applied to people who are apprehended at the border.
But the immigration judge, she forced Carmen to come to San Antonio for the hearing, which is unusual, and then dropped the case. It seemed like the judge was in on it.
Well, Dave, I can take that. There's been significant amount of pressure placed on immigration judges to dismiss cases. There was a memo from the Department of Justice that was obtained by NBC News in June that reflected some of that pressure. You also have to remember, too, immigration judges are not exactly like judges throughout the judiciary. They are part of the Department of Homeland Security. They're very specific for immigration rulings. It's almost like a different class of judge, I would say.
Right. Still, it seems like, they are called judges. They're acting like judges. We treat them like judges as if they were actual judges in the judicial system. It just seems, odd that they would be colluding with ICE in order to meet these target numbers from the Trump administration. Go ahead.
I was going to say, look at Carmen's case. She attempted to not have them dismiss her case, right? She's objecting. They're going to say, we're going to dismiss the charges against you, which basically removes any protections that you have because you're not going through the immigration process. She objected to that, and they overruled that, which makes it an even more extreme action from my perspective.
All right, we're going to take a break here. We're going to hear more about what happened to Carmen since, how this has impacted her family. There are other cases like this that are told in this documentary, Crackdown, Deported Under Trump. It's a Fault Line series documentary on Al Jazeera English. You can watch it. It's available to be seen on YouTube. And we're open for your calls and questions and comments. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're going to be back in a minute.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company. They are committed to helping policyholders build strong and thriving businesses through their exceptional service. More at texasmutual.com/texansdeliver. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a documentary produced by Al Jazeera English, Crackdown, Deported Under Trump. It's part of their Fault Lines documentary series. They come to San Antonio. We learned about Carmen Herrera when she went to our local immigration court, and she was detained and then later deported. We want to find out more about her story. And our phone lines are open for you to call in, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Sean on the phones. And Sean, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, so my mother was undocumented. Her entire family was. So the three kids and grandparents, or my grandparents, they came to Chicago, then here in Texas. And immigration was not a big deal. They would come and go as they pleased, back and forth across the border. All the kids were actually born in Mexico because they would go back to Mexico and give birth to be with the family and then come back and forth. And then when they decided to get American status, it was, again, not a big deal. It was like a spur of the moment. They got their documents in a week. It was still 5 or 6. And some of the stuff that Judge Lily brought them all for, and like, all right, you want to be citizens? I christened thee. They all became citizens overnight. It was simple. Nobody cared. I just want to know what happened in our, especially in Texas, where immigration like this just was not a big deal and people could come and go as they please. And now we're in this state. So thank you.
All right, Sean, thank you for that. So Kate Lincoln Goldfinch, you're an immigration attorney. You had been representing Carmen Herrera in her case. How have things changed? I mean, what about those good old days?
Well, I mean, things have really changed since 9/11. The borders were definitely more porous between 9/11 and people were able to come and go more easily. Since that, people have been sort of trapped inside the United States and separated from their family. And we haven't had immigration reform for decades, really since the 80s when there was an amnesty program. So the ways that people can immigrate to this country are through employment or family or humanitarian. And new arrivals to this country, many of them are asylum seekers. And for many years or decades, people could present at the border and go through a credible fear interview. And if they might qualify, they were allowed in. And all of that was dismantled under the Trump administration during the first administration with the migrant protection protocols and Title 42 closure. That was really the main focus of the first administration. And what they did during Trump 2.0 is they hit the reset button, completely closed down the southern border to the asylum seekers. And what they're doing now is they're turning their sights to interior enforcement, including people who are in legal process, people who are asylum seekers, many Cubans, Haitians, Nicaraguans, Venezuelans who came in legally. They came in using CBP-1. They came in under parole programs. They're legitimate asylum seekers. And Trump has directed ICE to increase the quotas and detain more people. And they've gone after, you know, what I'm calling the low-hanging fruit. People who are actually in a legal process showing up for their appointments are being detained and separated from their families. And it's really horrific what we're seeing on the front lines. And Carmen's story is a quintessential story of what I see on a daily basis in my practice as an immigration lawyer in Texas. There are so many families that are suffering this exact same fate right now because of the policies of the Trump administration.
And Natasha Del Toro, the investigative reporter for Fault Lines, Al Jazeera English, you caught up with the family of Carmen Herrera. What was that like? What did you find?
Carmen, you know, she's a 34-year-old woman. She's married to Mexican-American citizen. Carmen actually spent most of her life in the United States. I would say her English might be better than her Spanish. She raised six daughters in Texas. I believe all of them are U.S. born. She had a job here. She was a productive citizen. I mean, she was undocumented. And as Kate, I think, mentioned, she had several different legal pathways to becoming a citizen. She does not have a criminal background at all. So when this all happened and she was detained, we had the opportunity to speak to her girls who were, I think by that point, it was like their summer break. And they were at home without their mom. Their mom was sort of the central focus of their world. You can only imagine what it would be like for young girls to be without their mom and not know what their mom's fate is going to be, when they're going to see their mother. They learned about what happened to Carmen the same way a lot of the people in the country learned about what happened to Carmen, was through watching that viral video and seeing the way that those agents manhandled her mother and her mother's screams and the person that was also in the detention bus with her screaming. So, it was traumatic. It was a traumatic experience. It's one that they're never going to forget. Now they have since been reunited with their mom. But one of the things that they had told us when we interviewed them was that their whole lives were going to change. I mean, they didn't know what was in store for them moving to Mexico. One of the daughters, her name is Jade, she was about to start high school. And she said over the summer, this was going to be her summer to figure out what she wanted to be when she grew up. And she told me this as she had tears streaming down her face because she saw herself as an American. So her whole life was about to change. And, you know, one of the reasons why we decided to tell this story was because we wanted people to understand the faces, the people behind these statistics. We hear about these detentions. We see some of them, you know, in these viral videos, but we don't actually get to understand what the family is going through and who these people are. So we actually had an opportunity to talk to them and understand that this is something that's going to change their lives forever.
And Jeremy Young, the senior producer at Fault Lines, Al Jazeera English, the reporting on this. So I covered immigration courts and people being apprehended and prayer vigils. But it's very difficult for us to get to this side of the story where you're able to follow up and do that. I'm appreciative and I'm glad we're able to bring that to our listeners right now. But this is a really hard story to cover because of, you know, it's happening right in front of us, but yet so much of it is unavailable and so we're not able to keep up with it. Can you talk about, you know, how to pursue the story?
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that point a lot. One of the things I think to remember about Carmen's daughters, the younger daughters are 8, 10, and 12. And we spent time with them while Carmen was in a detention center with just really difficult conditions. And I think the fact that we were able to be present, I was very thankful that the family was willing to be open enough to let us be there at such a crisis point in their lives. And I think that was one of the reasons we were able to have a good understanding about, I think we interviewed Kate for our documentary, she's in the film. And the thing that she says about, you know, all six daughters for Carmen is that she's the center of their world. And it's really true. She's like, you know, imagine a mom with six daughters. I mean, it's incredible. But the young ones in particular were really missing her and were really upset. And so we were able to sort of kind of witness that in real time. And I think that's one of the things that comes through about the story.
Let's go to a caller. And the number is 833-877-8255 if you want to join the conversation. Let's go to Angie. And Angie, you're on the air.
Hi. My questions are, what was the reason the judge terminated the case?
Okay.
Did he give a reason?
All right, Angie, thank you for that. That's the central question, like what happened? Why did that fall apart? Kate Lincoln Goldfinch?
You know, I can only speculate, and I actually have to be very careful because the Department of Justice has vowed to go after immigration lawyers like me if we step out of line. What I can share is that it was very curious to me. It didn't make sense to me at all that the judge would have allowed the case to be terminated in the way that she did. But speculating as to why is something that I don't actually feel very safe to do right now.
So One thing, Dave, if I can add, sorry, I was just going to say, one thing we do know, because the memo that Jeremy had mentioned that NBC had received, we know that once these cases are dismissed, the immigrants in question can be put into expedited removal proceedings. So once their cases are dropped, they can be removed. And that's exactly what happened to Carmen. I think this is just, if I may say, a quick and easy way to get people in expedited removal proceedings into detention centers and back to their countries of origin.
But Jeremy Young, these people, the immigrants who are seeking to use the legal process, they were basically baited to come to the immigration courts. They said, you can't use Zoom anymore. You got to show up. And then they were cuffed and hauled off. That's how it worked, right?
Dave, I think there's only one way to characterize it, and it's an impossible situation. I mean, what are your choices if you don't show up for your court hearing and your case gets dismissed? You might have federal agents battering down your front door and having a traumatic experience that could impact your family. So it's a very difficult decision for people to make, especially when they see it on the news and they know that it's happening. I will add, to answer Angie's question, you know, there really is not an explanation. It's not dismissed for a specific reason.
It just case dismissed and then out the door you go and we've got some ICE agents waiting for you and they're going to haul
you off. Right. The reason why Carmen is protected when she goes into the courthouse is because she is pursuing an immigration claim. It's in process, right? Or you're claiming asylum. So you have the right to a credible fear interview. And during that time period, while it's pending, you're not permitted to be deported. And so by dismissing the charges, by dropping those charges, your protections are gone. And what's been happening around the country is that ICE agents are planted inside the courtroom, outside the courthouse, and they're ready there to snatch someone off of the street when they come out of court.
In Carmen's case, actually, I was just going to add, because this wasn't something that we really included in the documentary, but that I thought was very compelling. After they dropped her case, she said that her heart started racing because they saw the agents. There was, like, she said, six agents that followed her and her husband into the elevator. There were a number of them ready to arrest her. And many of the people we spoke to said that it really felt like they were being trapped.
Kate Lincoln Goldfinch, is this still happening to people?
It absolutely is. There are still courthouse detentions happening at various courts at different times. And we've all seen the videos of the ICE agents lining the hallways covered in masks. And there are, you know, court watch programs have arisen where people will notify folks that ICE is at the courthouse that day. It's also happening at the ICE check-in. So when someone is in court proceedings, they have to show up for their hearing before the judge, but they also go to regular check-ins at ICE, which is where the shooting occurred in Dallas yesterday. It was at an ICE check-in facility like that. And those facilities are also now sites of detentions. And it's a, 50-50 chance when someone who's in a legal process is showing up for their ICE check-in, they may or may not get detained. And some people have taken to bringing armies of people accompanying them who may be clergy, they may be veterans, just to help protect them. But sometimes people come and they'll be detained with their children, separate from their children. I mean, I've had clients who have been taken into detention at a legal ICE check-in and then separated once inside. A client who had, it was a husband and a wife, two daughters, ages 4 and 10, they were detained at an ICE check-in, taken to a family detention center, and then inside that detention center, inexplicably, were separated from each other. Those two girls were sent to a facility for unaccompanied children. Mom was sent to one detention center and Dad was sent to a third detention center. And it took us 2 months to get that family reunited. And I have multiple stories like that where people are just showing up. They are in a legal process. They are showing up for their appointments and ICE is taking them and separating them from their families. It's really horrific what is happening. And it is continuing to happen today as we speak. I'm sure it is happening in multiple locations around this country right now.
Can you imagine having to go to court, not knowing if you were ever going to see your children again? Your kids are at school. Who's going to pick them up? Who's going to take care of them? It is just a traumatic experience. And then they do take you away, and you do have to deal with all that. And why is that happening? You never broke the law. You have no criminal history. You were told this is not who the Trump administration would be targeting. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. We'll get John on the air. He's called in right after this. And the number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We've seen an escalation of enforcement by ICE in the United States. These agents are looking to remove people that are not U.S. citizens, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're in the country without authorization or they're here illegally, but still they find themselves in the grip of ICE. What is happening? How is this impacting our community? What can be done going forward? Is this really what we want? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK for you to join the conversation. Let's go to a caller, John. And John, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. My question is for the attorney. I was an agent for 30 years. And my question is, under what was her claim for adjustment of status from illegal to legal?
All right, John, thank you for that question. And Kate Lincoln Goldfinch.
Well, her case is a little procedurally complex, but she had several avenues for relief, primarily asylum. She had a legitimate asylum claim. She also had a pending U visa claim, having been the victim of a crime. And also, she is married to a U.S. citizen. Her family-based immigration case is a little bit more complicated, but she had these multiple avenues for relief. And for sure, the judge should have maintained jurisdiction before her overseeing an asylum case. Because to the point about expedited removal, where a lot of these folks are being dismissed and then expeditedly removed. Well, expedited removal, the statute says that we cannot send anyone away quickly if they claim asylum and if they go through a credible fear interview. And Carmen is one of those people who had claimed asylum. And a lot of these folks who are being dismissed and expeditedly removed are legitimate asylum seekers. In fact, several months ago, I was in a meeting with the head of the chief counsel's office, and we were wondering if something like this might occur under the Trump administration. And in this small meeting, this woman said, "There's no way we would do that. That wouldn't make any sense for us to dismiss an asylum seeker's case before the court and then attempt to expeditedly remove them." When in fact, a couple months later, that did start to occur nationwide, presumably because of a directive from high ups in Washington.
I mean, there have been many statements made by the Department of Homeland Security about what's going on at these immigration courts, for example, and they turn out not to be true, but still they stand by them. Like they're saying, we never handcuffed children. And yet we can see that with our own eyes. There are children that are zip tied. So, I mean, they're telling us not to ignore the evidence of our eyes, Carmen? I mean, Kate?
Natasha,
whoever wants to comment.
I think that we all know that we are told things by this administration and claims are made, and data often does not support that. And this is another one of those instances. They would have all of us believe that the people that they are targeting are dangerous criminal lawbreakers, you know, drug traffickers, human traffickers, the worst of the worst. They repeat that over and over again, the worst of the worst. And I can tell you anecdotally from my own experience, but also the data supports it, that the vast majority of people who are being detained and apprehended right now by the Trump administration have no criminal history whatsoever. And many of them are in a legal process. They are complying with all of the laws and regulations. And yet, and I don't think this is too strong of a word, they are being tortured by our government. They are being taken and disappeared from their families. And the conditions inside these detention centers are abhorrent. And it's unimaginable what these people are being put through. And that is absolutely not what the messaging is coming from this administration. They would have us believe that conditions are good, human rights are being followed, and that they're only going after criminals. And that's not actually true.
So let's talk about Franco, who was also profiled in the documentary Crackdown, Deported Under Trump, Fault Lines, a documentary on Al Jazeera English. So tell us about Franco. He was a Venezuelan barber. He was detained over unsubstantiated claims that he was affiliated with the gang based on his tattoos, and that was very vague and nebulous and doesn't really mean anything. Explain all this, Natasha Del Toro.
Sure. So Franco was the other case that we profiled in our story, Franco and his wife, Joani. Franco is a 27-year-old Venezuelan guy and his wife, 23-year-old. They had been persecuted in Venezuela. They had been kidnapped, protesting the Maduro government, and they made a difficult decision to leave Venezuela, leaving their 3-year-old daughter there with her mother. They traveled across multiple countries, crossing the Darien Gap. They rode La Bestia. She told me this incredible story of everything they did to reach the United States, where they thought that it's a land of laws and a land where they could be safe and a land where they would be able to have opportunities. Once they arrived, they presented themselves to immigration agents. They requested asylum. Once they made it to the U.S., and again, they did everything that they were supposed to do, to seek asylum, which is a legal process that's existed in the United States, I think, since at least 1980. So once they got to Texas, they got jobs. He was working in construction and as a barber, which is his passion. She was also working and at a routine ICE check-in. So, they're picking people up, as Kate mentioned, at courthouses, but also at these ICE check-ins. He went in for his ICE check-in, as he was supposed to, in February of this year. And that's where he was detained unexpectedly and imprisoned. So Johnny was waiting for him, and he never came out. From there, they were waiting to see what was going to happen to Franco. He was moved around.
But he ends up in El Salvador, in the gulag.
So 6 weeks later, they thought they were going to send him to Venezuela. Next thing you know, he's on a flight to El Salvador with about 200 other men, accused of being a terrorist in the Tren de Aragua gang, which is from Venezuela. He says he has no idea. He's never been a member of that gang, doesn't know much about that gang. And he's sent to CECOT, which is a prison for a high security prison for terrorists that is known for torture, where few people make it out alive. And he's locked up in that prison incommunicado for 4 months. And his wife is in the United States, having to try to survive on her own, not knowing whether her husband is dead or alive. Even his lawyer didn't know what was happening to him, where he was being sent, because they did have a lawyer. So, 4 months later of him being locked up and tortured, he was finally released. He and the other prisoners were finally released in a deal. And we know now that a majority of the people that were sent to CECOT also had no criminal record. Franco had no criminal record.
So they kept telling us that these were gang members and these were the worst of the worst, and they needed to be locked up in this, this facility in another country. But that's not true.
Right. No, it just wasn't true. We have documents that show that Franco had no criminal record in Venezuela or in the United States. These were people who were escaping persecution and who were trying to have a better life for themselves and their families. So it just wasn't true. I mean, and that is just something that's borne out in records. There is no record that shows the majority of the people that were there did not have a criminal background and suffered. They were tortured. So, and he described that to us.
All right, I'm going to go to a caller. Let's go to Lawrence. And Lawrence, you're on the air.
I previously was listening to a report that you guys actually did that was with one of these immigration judges. And it was a really good interview where they explained that she was subsequently fired. But these judges are getting, you know, threats of losing their jobs and are being instructed to rubber stamp these cases and dismiss them, which would allow ICE to immediately, you know, kick these people out of the country. You know, it's just really concerning that, you know, all of our rights are being taken away. And it almost... This with the Trump administration period, it almost reminds me of the kid's book, you know, of An Emperor Has No Clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that this isn't a kid's book. These are people's lives.
Well, thank you for the call, Lawrence. So Jeremy Young, the producer at Fault Lines, Al Jazeera English, the idea that it's almost as if we're doing show trials, pretending like we have a system, but do we really?
I mean, it's a very good question. To understand what happened to Franco, Natasha touched on this, but when they got sent to El Salvador and were incarcerated in this maximum security prison, they had no communication with the outside world. So imagine that for 1 week, imagine it for 1 month, imagine it for 3 months. It's a very long period of time. They were being beaten on a daily basis. Franco says in the documentary that they would stomp on his toes with combat boots and turned his toenails black. He almost lost one of his toes.
Okay, here's a gross detail. They had to lick each other's backs.
Mm-hmm.
There was like some sadistic stuff that went on that, you know, and there was also stuff like, you know, controlling the lights and, you know, waking people up when they're trying to sleep, sleep deprivation techniques. I mean, these are things that we associate with torture.
And the United States paid millions of dollars, an estimated $13 million to the government of El Salvador to house these individuals. Later, the courts have found that this was unlawful and had to stop. But still, the United States directed this and empowered this. So Natasha, really quickly, I've got about a minute here. Thoughts?
Sure. El Salvador is not the only country that has accepted these kinds of deals with the Trump administration to accept deportees. You have countries in Africa that are accepting, and other countries in Latin America that are accepting deportees for money. Countries that are poor, that have poor human rights records, and these people are being sent. Often we don't know their names, we don't know their records, we don't know much about them at all, and they're just being sent to these places, and we can't track them. We have to really question, is this who we are as a country,
right? And imagine being there, this is happening to you, and maybe you're thinking that no one cares that this is happening. I mean, is that
true?
You're
in a black hole.
That's our decision. We can make a decision ourselves. Do we care about this or not? That's something we have to think about. Let's take a break. The number is 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. For me, it felt less like enforcing the priorities and the real concerns of our country and saying, well, everyone is a threat now. Let's just pad the stats and get as many people out of here as we can. I couldn't stomach it. That is Adam Boyd. He is a former ICE attorney, and he is also part of the documentary Crackdown Deported Under Trump, Fault Lines documentary on Al Jazeera English. A little bit about Adams there, Jeremy Young. Tell us more.
Yeah, interesting young attorney who, you know, couldn't accept what was going on and decided to leave the agency. I think to follow up on one of Kate's points, what she said before about targeting dangerous criminals, it's really hard to find the most dangerous people, the worst of the worst. They don't want to be found, and it takes resources. It takes investigative skills and techniques. And so when you compare that to showing up at a Home Depot and arresting people who are looking for work, or to show up at the courthouse in San Antonio and arrest Carmen Herrera, it's a lot easier to do that than to find someone who's hiding from you and is a dangerous criminal.
Let's go to caller Sinclair. And Sinclair, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I was really curious. First, I really did listen to the article on the judges the other day, too, and I heard the DOJ, these
judges are under the executive, which I was surprised. I didn't know they weren't under the judicial. The second question I had was, why are some of the immigrants waiting so long to go for citizenship, especially like when they're married to a citizen? How long does that take for them to grant citizenship under those situations?
Thank you. All right, Sinclair, thank you for that question. Kate Lincoln Goldfinch is an immigration attorney, and she handled Carmen Haddad's case.
Yeah, I think it's a misnomer that there, you know, there's immigrants who just don't do anything. I mean, of course that happens here and there, but a lot of immigrants do go through a process. And the truth is, I think we all know our immigration system is broken. The backlogs are really wild. I mean, it takes longer than 20, 25 years for the sibling of a U.S. citizen to get status through a family petition. And people often die while they are waiting for their cases to move forward. And in the immigration courts, we have, you know, over 3 million cases pending. And the solution to that is not to do what the Trump administration is doing, which is firing experienced immigration judges. The resources that we should be putting forward should be put toward processing cases, speeding up processing time so that people can access legal status. But instead, the administration has tried to convince the American public that immigrants are the worst of the worst and that our taxpayer dollars are better spent going after people through enforcement actions. And that is not the truth of what we should be doing. What we really should be doing is expanding immigration legal options, making the process more easy for people to go through, because the truth is our economy needs immigrant labor more than it ever has before. I mean, our birth rate is dropping, baby boomers are aging, immigrants are the ones who take care of our elderly by and large, and we really need a leadership in our government that says, you know what, immigration is a good word. We need immigration. Let's not forget that enforcement matters, but why don't we talk about sort of common sense, bipartisan effort toward expanding immigration and acknowledging and appreciating what immigrants bring to this country. That is the truth. That is the reality of what's going on. But instead, we have leadership that tries to convince everybody that immigrants are dirty and dangerous and out to take jobs and hurt people. And that's not accurate. Again, anecdotally and statistically, that is not borne out in the data. Immigration is a good thing for this country, and we really need to hold our leaders accountable to speak about immigrants with respect and admiration.
You know what made America great? Immigrants. Prove me wrong. Let's go to caller Nancy. Nancy, you're on the air.
Hi. Yes, my son-in-law is Mexican. He had a provisional green card that expired, and he's been waiting for his hearing. My grandson, American-born, 4 years old, my daughter also, she and my son-in-law are separated, going through a divorce. He lives in New York. My question is, if my grandson is with him, either in New York or in Texas, because he comes to visit, when my son-in-law gets picked up, if he does, with no papers, what happens to my four-year-old grandson if he has a copy of his American passport with him?
All right, so there's a lot of really personal stuff we can't answer about your story, Nancy, and I'm sorry about that, but let's talk about it in a very, very general sense. Kate Lincoln Goldfinch, do U.S.-born American children end up being deported or scooped up and part of this mass deportation?
Well, it probably won't surprise anyone to hear that there's not a real thoughtful and careful an organized process to this question, what happens with the children. Sometimes the children get swept up and taken into detention. Sometimes the agents on the ground are patient and kind enough to await for someone else to come pick them up. Sometimes mistakes happen and U.S. citizen children are taken into detention, and it takes time to obtain the paperwork and get in touch with the right people to get that child released. So I think the best advice that I would have, I mean, first of all, I would say it doesn't sound to me like the person that you're describing is without legal status. So I would recommend a consultation with an immigration lawyer. But when someone who is undocumented has a child with them, the best course of action is to have some type of authorization agreement with someone who lives nearby, who has legal status and always has their phone on, that that person within a moment's notice can show up where the arrest is happening, and that within 10 or 15 minutes, someone can be there to pick up that child if that's what the parent wants. It's the planning ahead, being prepared, and having the documentation ready that immigrants need to be thinking about and doing right now, not waiting until the emergency happens.
Dave, I wanted to add, how frightening is it that Nancy's grandson, four-year-old grandchild, has to carry a passport with him to prove his identity? And it's true of a lot of U.S. citizens who are now carrying either passports or passport cards with them at all times for fear that they have to prove their citizenship.
So, Natasha Del Toro, your documentary is on YouTube. Watch it there. It was gripping. I looked at the comments below. Many of them.
Never look at the comments, Dave. You never read the comments.
They were not sympathetic. Many of the comments were still very much like, go Trump, go. So what's happening there?
I think we hit an ultra-right beehive is what I think maybe happened. I'm not really sure who these trolls are, but it does seem like it's surprising because there are the comments that you see online, and then there's the reality of like the people that you're calling in. You know, we all live amongst,
And we know from polling that the vast majority of Americans do not support this. They do not. They thought they were going to be, you know, getting rid of the worst of the worst or what have you, instead of hardworking people, people that we know, and the people we know are beneficial. They're benefit America. So, yeah.
These are workers. These are teachers. These are our neighbors. These are people that we go to church with. These are people that live in our communities and make up the fabric of our society. And so to see people abused and treated in this way and traumatized is painful. And I don't know anybody that really who would make comments like the ones that are in the comments to our documentary. I know those some of those people are out there, but I will be interested to see if this draconian policy ends up backfiring. I know this was a big promise of Trump's campaign, mass deportations, but I do believe most people assumed that he was going to be deporting the worst of the worst and criminals. And
the people who are eating our cats and dogs.
Right. And that's just not the truth. And that's what we were hoping to expose in this documentary. We wanted people to really see that and feel the impact that these policies are having. I do agree with Kate. We do have a broken immigration system. It would be good for people to be able to be here lawfully and to take the steps, you know, but that needs to be addressed on a policy level. Abusing the individuals that are here and separating families, I think a lot of people would say that's not the way to go.
I want to emphasize this point. It's not part of the documentary, but under the One Big Beautiful Bill that Congress passed, $75 billion in additional funds over 4 years was allocated for ICE covering their deportation efforts. $75 billion. And in the same legislation, another $45 billion was earmarked for expanding ICE detention infrastructure over the next 4 to 5 years. And there's more tens of billions of dollars, you know, for transportation and enforcement operations. So America is spending hundreds billion dollars at least in increasing ICE capacity for removing people who generally are good for our society and good for our communities. I mean, these are facts that people, it seems to be, don't really, are not evident or are not, you know, up front right now. But Jeremy Young, this is something that people need to be recognized. It costs a lot of money to do this.
Absolutely. It's a tremendous amount of resources that are going into it. And I would also mention, I talked to Carmen a few days ago to let her know about the radio show. And she said to make sure that I shared that she feels grateful for all the support that she did receive from people. Like, you know, she does feel like getting her story out there has been helpful. And there are the people in the comments section, but there's also people who have supported her, and she feels that and appreciates that.
Yeah, we'll be sure to let her know that we're thinking about her all the time, and you know, something. This is not who we are. But we got to assert that. Let's thank our guest, Natasha Del Toro, investigative reporter in Fault Lines, Al Jazeera English, Jeremy Young, senior producer, Fault Lines at Al Jazeera English, and also the Carmen Haddad's immigration attorney, Kate Lincoln Goldfinch. Thank you also. Thank all of y'all for coming on the air today and telling us this important story. Appreciate that.
Thank you so much, David. Really appreciated having us on.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.